Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. The time is now. Wait a minute, the band's still going to play, I think. You guys got some more to play? You sure? Okay. Oh, all right. All right. I thought you had another note to play. All right, so good evening, good evening. The time is now 7:02 p.m. on the East Coast, 4:02 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is March the 21st, 2023. And yes, this is not normal. I know. For TMGS to broadcast on a Tuesday. But I said, you know, with all this time I got, it is my day off. Why don't I do something a little different, change into my week? So I thought of something. I said, you know, why not have that conversation on the show? Why not? I got time. So I'm making time to bring in another segment of the show on a Tuesday, see how it works out, see what you guys think, and have some fun with it. You know, on Saturdays, we definitely save our Saturdays for what's happening in Hot Topics and, you know, especially our special guests. Thank God for all of them that we've had over the years. I'm so thankful and blessed. But today I said, you know, I'm going to do something a little different. So, I was going to share some stories, some experiences that I've had, and I'm going to still do that. But I thought, well, you know what? It would be interesting if people share some stories that might be truth and might be fiction. True or false is a better way of saying it. And because, you know, social media can share a lot of false stories, a lot of lies, and people believe them. So I said, you know, tonight we're going to do something where I'm going to share a story, at least until other folks decide to chime in. I reached out to see if some folks were chiming in. Whether they do or don't, I don't know. But I'm going to share a story, an experience I had being at a particular celebrity's house. And so if you have a story you want to share, please do. Share your story. Let me go to the chat room and open up the chat room. Apologize. There's probably people at Blog Talk Radio like, hey, man, your chat room ain't open. So let me open up my chat room here so they can respond, share their story. Okay, so as I type that in. So that's the whole thing for tonight is share an amazing story, an experience that you had. And I'm going to give everybody about 5 minutes to share the story. Because I have time. But you got 5 minutes to share your story. And we'll listen to it. And, you know, we have to decide, is that believable? I mean, the most amazing story you can think of an experience. that you ever had in your life. But then again, it could be the truth or it could be a false story. And we have to determine whether you're telling us a true story or you made it up. Doesn't that sound interesting? I know it is because people, as I said, read the internet, believe everything there. Let's see what you hear actually out of the quote-unquote horse's mouth. All right. So let me welcome people in the chat room real quick. I'm trying to type this in. Okay. And so chat room, you're there. Welcome to TMGS. And then what I'm going to do is also go over here to the soundboard, pull up all my music. And I know I have a bunch of stuff here. I definitely want to play not all of it, but a good amount of it. How come it's doing that? Okay, so. Oh, show all. Here we go. I'm good now. All right, so you guys. Story time. Wow. What do I share? I want to hold on because I know there's some folks who said they're going to chime in. I want them to hear part of the story. And I'm also sharing with people on the Facebook and my Instagram page to see if they're able to chime in. I know it's 7:06 p.m. Eastern time. Folks on the West Coast, it's only 4 o'clock. Some are probably at work. Okay, so I'm going to give it time. All right. I'm going to give it a little bit of time. But you know what? Let me share something about my pet peeves before we go into the whole topic of the show. I have to say this to all you parents out there. It's just really simple. Really simple. Control your child. That's all. Control your child. That unnecessary screaming and hollering should not be tolerated. I know when I was that age, my teeth would probably be missing for all that unnecessary screaming and hollering. I know. Some of y'all be like, Michael, how dare you say that? That's so cruel. That's just child abuse. Well, back in the day, you didn't have the video cameras and everything. And not to say my mama slapped my teeth out of my mouth. I still had my teeth. But just the threat that my teeth would go down my throat would shut my ass up. If my mama said, you keep on screaming, boy, I'll smack your teeth all the way down your throat. And I would shut the hell up. Just a threat, that's all. Didn't have to be physical. Just the thought and the threat, I would stop. So I don't know where things have changed in time. I guess, you know, kids, you know, are controlling the household or controlling the parents. But all that unnecessary screaming and hollering needs to stop, parents. Come on now. It really does. And remind your kids, the store is not a playground. You don't go grab a bicycle and ride up and down the freaking aisle. No. You do that outside. A bicycle is for outdoors. You do that outside. You don't do it in the store. Okay? You young guys, grab a basketball that you know you're not going to buy, and you dribble the basketball around the whole store. You even take the basketball all the way over to the grocery damn department. And that is so disrespectful for the people who are trying to shop and concentrate on what they're trying to remember they're supposed to buy. And your ass come around the corner. George of the hoop. And you don't even buy the damn ball. Please stop that. Not a playground. Okay? Just keep that in mind. But unfortunately, we're in the times where people don't give a damn. They don't care. people just do what they want to do in public. They just do what they want to do. I don't care about, you know, cussing in front of little kids. Cuss in front of one of theirs, and then they might want to say something. Why are you cussing in front of my child? My child, dude, you pulled up playing all this loud-ass music with all the cuss words. What's the difference? People don't care, y'all. Not about you, only about themselves. All right, so let me give you guys a story, and that's what this show's all about. It looks like I don't have many people wanting to chime in, but true story. Tuesday, true story. Many years back, I would say and I can't give you the exact month, but in the late 70s, I was part of a band called Half the City. The name came up through the keyboard player. His name was David Irving. And David went on, of course, later on to be a great studio musician, worked with the greats like, of course, like a Patti LaBelle and even more over the years. But I knew David in high school. I was a drummer. I had a trap set and everything. Now, there was a lot of different bands around town, quite a few. But there was nothing like this band because the way this band was put together was the fact that some members went to Pasadena High School, some went to John Muir High School, and only one member went to PCC, which is Pasadena City College. And it was interesting because we had some great musicians in this band. We performed at different events. But here's the story I really want to tell you is about the time that two bands joined. Richard, I'm trying to think what was Richard's last name. He had a band, and we joined together because his mom had a group called the Foxy Five, and they were doing an event for Brick. But prior to doing that event, we were offered an opportunity, or actually it was brought to us, that we were chosen to perform at a fundraiser for, at the time, Mr. Tom Bradley, Mayor Tom Bradley of Los Angeles. So David's dad, who was a musician, a songwriter, he was in the Musicians Union, knew everybody in the business. Say, hey, look, I got you guys this gig. You guys need to rehearse. Y'all going to be at Sammy Davis Jr.'s house. And in my mind, I'm like, yeah, right, sure. And so we're rehearsing all these songs from Earth, Wind, and Fire and different artists, Rufus and Chaka Khan and all that stuff. And so the day comes for us to perform at this event at Sammy Davis Jr.'s house. Sammy Davis's house was on Summit Drive in the Beverly Hills, Hollywood area. And here we are. I believe David's dad had if I remember correctly, he had a white Peugeot. I think it was four-door, maybe two-door, but it was a Peugeot, right? And then we had this, station wagon with the brown paneling on the side, and maybe one other vehicle, but I do remember that station wagon, and it was loaded with equipment, speakers, drums, guitar cases, this and that and the other. And so we're riding over here to the rich side of town. We're in Pasadena. We're driving over here to Beverly Hills, Hollywood Hills area. And so we come up the hill, and really, the streets are real narrow in that area. It's not, really, it's like you almost have to drive up on the sidewalk in order for a person to pass, you come the other direction. Real narrow streets. So we're winding through it, and it's a hilly area, and we're winding through it. We come up to the address of Summit Drive. I don't remember the actual number, but I know that's the street that Sammy Davis Jr.'s house is on. And so we're out there, and we pull up. There's other vehicles and everything, and the security, the police, or whatever, which, you know, was directing traffic, you know, the guys, you know, that parked the cars and everything, finding a place to park the car. Security was like, no, you got to move on. And DeFosco Irvin, David's father, D. Irvin is what we call him. Mr. DeFosco Irvin said, no, we're the band. And the security guy had a look on his face like, huh? So he says, pull in. Pull around the side of the house. And it was funny because it was a gate. It was a big wrought iron gate. And once you got past that gate, you couldn't really see the property that well until you went past the stone cobbler type things, especially if you sign a car, and then get inside of that gate. And now you can see more of the property. And it was so amazing to look at this fountain once you got through the gate. And here's, you know, like a circle driveway. I don't recall the one vehicle. There was two vehicles there. I don't recall what the one was, but the one that stood out in my mind was a red Cadillac station wagon. Keep in mind, I told you, we pull up in this old, busted up looking panel on the side, Ford, I think it was, station wagon with all the equipment. But here's this Cadillac station wagon, red, crystal clean, beautiful, you know, parked along with the other car there. And so we pull along the side of the house, and we're instructed where we're supposed to enter through the backside. And then you get a view of the backyard. And that alone was amazing because it's a huge backyard. Huge. We're talking about Sammy Davis Jr.'s house, right? The land he had there, you could have built like 3-4 more homes there. And here's this huge swimming pool. Here's these two entertainment venues, I guess you can call them, because there were glass enclosures. One was a bar, and you can see the bartenders inside of them. And just a nice-sized glass enclosure of a bar. And then the other enclosure was a game room, pool table, a video game, you know, stuff and everything. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like this before. But what really blew me away was what I saw at the swimming pool. And I'm going to give you guys a hint and see if you chime in, you can give a guess. I'll give a hint. But there was a statue at the end of the swimming pool, at the very end of the swimming pool. There was a statue, which this statue was featured in a couple of movies. And Mr. Davis had it at his house. And I was like, you got to be freaking kidding me. This man has a statue at the end of the swimming pool, at the far end of the swimming pool. I'm like, okay. You know, I don't think I would have thought of that, but if I had that type of home. But okay, that's different. So we set up, and guests are arriving. And I can't recall everybody. I recall some of the names. The faces, but here's Red Buttons, legendary actor, a bunch of game show hosts, bunch of actors. I'm young, keep in mind, I recognize the faces, but I can't get all the names, but I recognize these faces that I've seen on television and movies, and I'm like, wow, that's such and such. There goes so-and-so. And it was kind of like crazy because now you see them, you know, not on television. You actually see them face-to-face. And you see them, some of them, didn't wear a lot of makeup. But you actually see what they look like, not behind the or not in front of the camera. I ain't gonna lie, something's kind of like eerie to me. I was like, ooh, that's how they really look in public. And you hear them talking, and you see their demeanor, and you see it in a different light than what you are used to as far as seeing them on television. Mayor Tom Bradley, of course, it was a fundraiser for him, arrives, and he's smiling and, you know, addressing his supporters and everything. He did a speech and everything. But now here we are, the band, and we're playing music. We're playing all the hits. We're playing stuff. We're even playing some older stuff. We're jamming. I mean, we're tight as hell. Not one person danced that night. Not one. And we're like, well, wait a minute. We're doing something wrong. Nope. We're just the band. We're just the music. Who's going to dance? Nobody danced. Oh, they walked by and they looked at us and gave a little thumbs up like, there you go. Great job, guys. I'm like, yeah, but we played music for you to, you know, shake a leg, something. Nope. That's not what it was all about. Obviously. So, And that really bothered many of us because we're so used to playing and expecting people to dance. But one of the members like, man, they don't like our music. I'm like, no, there's something more than that. This is not a nightclub. This is a social function. I learned to realize that. So, moving forward. After not getting any response on the dance floor, okay, they had tons of food. Trust me. I mean, they had plenty of food. You could eat whatever you wanted. You could eat stuff you never heard of, but it was there, and stuff that you did. What was really a trip was that Sammy Davis Jr. wasn't there, but his wife, Altadis, was. And she was such a gracious host that whole night. Every time she went past us, she always had a smile. Whenever we would take a break, she would ask, you guys okay? You need anything? Of course, we'd say, oh, we're fine, man. You know, whatever. Oh, no, we're fine. But what she did, which surprised me, she gave us a slight tour, the band, a slight tour, not the celebrities. I guess some of them probably had been there before, but no, she said, how would you guys like to see a little more of the house? And we're like, sure. Now, of course, you couldn't go into Sammy Davis Jr.'s bedroom or anything. It's private area. But what she showed us really blew me away. The living room had a sunken living room. It was the first time I've ever seen one in my life. I've never seen a sunken living room. I mean, I had heard of them, but I had never been in one. And this was one of the largest living rooms I ever seen in my life, and let alone this sunken living room. So here's this huge fireplace with this big mural across the top, automatically roll up, which exposed a screen. a video screen. This is before flat screens, you guys, so this is long before flat televisions and everything. But the wall directly opposite of that had pictures on the wall that actually were like windows, in a sense. Because that opposite wall from that flat screen, behind that wall was a projection room. So the pictures would actually open up, swing open off that wall, and the projector would project, of course, the movie onto the screen across from it. I had never seen anything like this. I'm like, wow. And she allowed us to peek into the projection room and look, and it was something like, you know, you would actually imagine you would see at an actual movie theater. There were reels and all that stuff. Of course, it was DVD players, but he actually had reels in there of actual films and set up in rows. And I was like, wow. So with that being an amazing, you know, view, I thought, okay, that's it. I saw what I wanted to see. The cat has a hell of a damn movie, home theater, before the term home theater became popular. I'm thinking, Sammy got a hell of a home theater. Nope, that wasn't it. Sammy and Alpha Beast had one hell of a library. And I'm talking about books from ceiling to floor. Literally. The way this was set up, it wasn't like a big library room, but like a long corridor, I should say. Well, there were books ceiling to floor. And when I say that, it's because they had those ladders. You ever seen the movies where they show the ladders that are on the runners that they can slide all the way down and climb all the way up to get the books? Now, keep in mind, Altavis and Sammy ain't no young folks, but they had this setup, and there was thousands of books. From ceiling to floor. And then if that wasn't enough, you turn the corner and here's the art gallery, in a sense, where they had paintings of some great artists. And one of them was, not one of them, but many of them, was Ernie Barnes. For all of you that watched Good Times and all the paintings that JJ allegedly did, that was done by Ernie Barnes. And, you know, Marvin Gaye and Ernie Barnes paintings or the album cover that he had for the I Want You album. On Good Times, you saw the paintings, you know, at the beginning and, you know, the end of the show. And then in some episodes, they show Sammy Davis Jr. had a good amount of Ernie Barnes paintings that you never saw on TV. I mean, a good amount. And I was like, wow. So if you thought that was enough, or at least I thought that was enough, I'm like, okay, this is Sammy Davis Jr. This cat, he's got it made. You know, the station wagon, you know, Cadillac out here in front of the fountain. He's got this big swimming pool, this enclosed glass bar, game room out in the back on, I mean, and like I said, you know, you're talking about the land in California is not cheap. And then, you know, he's got the sunken living room, the theater, the library, the Ernie Barnes paintings and everything. Keep in mind, we came through the back door, right, as a band. We came through the back door. And so we were actually, you know, working our way from the back of the house up to the front of the house. to the main entrance. We were not allowed to come through the front door. But before the end of the night, Ms. Alcides showed us and gave us a tour. And we finally get to the front of the house, and we're in the foyer, the entrance area. This huge chandelier hanging over my head is like sparkling. This huge entranceway, this huge door, huge doorway, huge foyer. And you're standing there like, wow, this is awesome. But what got me was this. When you walk in the house, there were these glass enclosures of, certain keepsakes and stuff like that on both sides of the entranceway. And there's pictures in there of Sammy, Alcides. But there's a picture of an individual, an artist that, to be honest, it was one of Sammy's best friends, a singer. And I never thought the guy could sing. I never thought he had a good voice. I was like, wow, this cat is a superstar. And his voice is just not there. I'm going to try to pull it up. I thought I had it. I'm going to see if I can pull it up, you guys, seriously, and let you be the judge of this individual. But his name was Anthony Newley. And Anthony Newley was well known among that group of individuals, like, of course, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy, all of them, that was their boy. I never thought Anthony Newley could sing. But honestly, he was very close, or Sammy felt like he was so close, where he had pictures of Anthony and his family in this entranceway of his home. Now, as the night went on, of course, no one danced. The band stopped playing. We were among the last to leave, breaking down our equipment. And Alcides, his wife, being the awesome host she was, had said, "Hey, you guys, I really appreciate you, and really enjoyed the music." And we looked into like, somebody actually was listening. True story. She actually said that. And that made, I don't know about the rest of the guys, that made my night, that she acknowledged that we were a band there doing what we were hired to do. Granted, a few folks walked by and gave a thumbs up. We didn't know how to take that, but we appreciate the fact that she acknowledged us at the end of the night. And unfortunately, I'm sure all of you all know that after Sammy's passing, Alcides couldn't keep the house. Alcides had to leave the house. Alcides had to move into another area. I do believe it was where she even had to move, I think, to her own mother's home. She lost all that. And unfortunately, some years ago, she passed away. But I'm thankful for the experience. I'm thankful for the fact that I actually was able to see how a super celebrity, because we're talking about Sammy Davis Jr., black man who went out of stuff during his era, but just kept going. And had everything, from what I could see. But unfortunately, there was some downfalls, some drawbacks, and lost basically everything. So that's my true story. That's my true experience. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of music, and we'll come back momentarily. I want to see what I want to play here, you guys. I thought I had some Sammy Davis Jr. music on here. Apparently, it looks like I don't. But this is just an experiment Tuesday night, broadcasting live on a Tuesday. Tuesday True Stories is what we're doing. And if you have a true story you want to share, go ahead and do so. And we're going to, you know, and you could tell a story that might seem real. And we'll determine if it is or not. You could tell, not necessarily a lie, but you can embellish. And let's see if that's the truth. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, want to give a shout out to a friend of mine who just recently got a role in a upcoming TV series, and also he's been working on a movie role. Mr. Derek Muhammad, staying busy in the acting field. Congratulations, Derek. We look forward to seeing the new projects that you're working on. Make sure you let us know so I can share with all the listeners here on the TMGN. All right, so I want to go ahead and take a quick music break, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
how sweet. And you keep her just right, keeps her on the street.
My mute will go off. Okay, there we go. Welcome back to TMGS. You listen to the TMGS Michael Gaye Show special edition on a Tuesday night. Something I thought I'd just cook up real quick and share some interesting stories. Tuesday True Stories. And to see what you all think about it. Obviously, not everybody's into it, but that's no problem. I just shared the story about being at the residence of Mr. Sammy Davis Jr. years ago, and just the lifestyle that I experienced that he was having, him and his wife, who unfortunately, of course, he passed, and a lot of things didn't go well in the end. And you kind of wonder about that. Here's a legend, and wow, it just went away, you know, basically went away. By the way, that was Mr. Ball Scats with JoJ, a great music classic that I love, and I'm sure many of you have heard that track before, if you're a Ball Scats fan. Not everybody is, but I've always been a Ball Scats fan. I like Miss Sun, JoJo, just hit after hit that was brought to us over the years. Let me see. I've got something here I'm trying to pull up. Bear with me for a moment. It should be here. Should have uploaded. Oh, here it is. So I'm going to upload something here. Okay. You guys bear with me. So I can get this over onto the board real quick. And it is Sammy Davis Jr. Hey, Sammy. I got you over here. Let me see if I can get you loaded in real quick and see if people remember this. Classy. And then there are some other ones, all right, that he did. So let me see. This was this will upload real quick. Looks like it's moving pretty fast. Yeah, that looks pretty good. So let me scroll down, see if it's in the upload zone. Okay, it's uploading. So it's going to be a minute before it gets to a point that I can play it. No, actually, it looks like it came up real quick. So since we were just talking about the legendary Mr. Sammy Davis Jr. and I shared with you an experience I had being on his premises, let's listen to probably his biggest hit ever, and then I'll tell you guys something else that you probably remember or forgot. You're listening to TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. We'll be right back on Tuesday.
Candy you want. Sweet chocolate, chocolate malted candy, gumdrop, anything you want. You've come to the right man because I'm the candy man.
Ooh. Who can take a sunrise? Sprinkle it with you. Cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two. The candy man. Ooh, the candy man can. Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Who can take a rainbow?
Wrap it in a tie. Soak it in the sun and make a groovy lemon pie. The Candyman.
The Candyman.
The Candyman can.
The Candyman can.
The Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Candyman
can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste
good.
The Candyman can.
The Candyman can.
The Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. Yes, the Candyman can, cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
That was the late, great Mr. Sammy Davis Jr., the Candyman. And for you guys who tune in late, well, yeah, I shared my story of being on the premises of a legend and his wife, after these awesome, awesome individuals. All right, so it looks like not everybody's into this conversation tonight and want to participate. That's cool. I was just trying to see if you want to share a story, true or untrue, and see if you could dupe us into believing it or telling us a true story. That was the whole premise of this on a Tuesday night. And normally we don't broadcast on a Tuesday, but so I tried something different. Maybe something else will work in the not too distant future. All right, so, but I'm going to still broadcast, bring you some good music, and share some more stories. More to share. You thought that was the only one? Are you kidding me? So, let me see here. Let me see what I got musically real quick while I pull up a story. Oh, okay. I think I got a music track I can play for you. One of my favorites. Oh, no. Not that one, Michael. Not that one. Oh, I think I found one. Here's a track that came out not too long ago, actually. Probably about, well, I'll have to say a little bit over 2 years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago, produced by Mr. Leon Silvers, and got a lot of airplay overseas, minor airplay here in the U.S. And that's what really bothers me is that we're, you know, artists that started here are more appreciated and continue to thrive overseas than they do in their home, you know, their home area. I mean, are we just the fact that we're like, okay, that's an old group, we need a new group. But people overseas look at it differently. And fortunately, I've had conversations with artists that are, you know, from here and overseas, and they have shared with me their opinions, but I'm like, but what about the people here? What are your thoughts? Why do you throw artists away so quickly in some cases? Now, granted, there are some legendary artists that are still here and still appreciated, but there's some that I think that we just don't, I don't know, we just want something that's how should I put it? Something that's more fabricated. We want artists who really can't sing, to be honest, really have no talent, instead of the ones that actually bust their butt and work hard. All right, so here's Shalamar with The Real Thing. We'll be right back.
Like what we have, nothing better than you. We got a strong foundation, one that's built on love.
welcome back to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL out of Georgia on a special Tuesday night show. And it's a show where I'm look at where Tuesday true stories. And I invited folks to come on and share theirs. Obviously, they don't want to do so because I wanted to have fun with it. But I will go ahead and share another true story of an experience I had over the years. And this one, I just shared the one before about being at Sammy Davis Jr.'s house. This one is working with Mr. Dennis Edwards. And I'm sharing this with all due respect to him because he's one of the most iconic vocalists of all time. Of all the years that the Temptations have been performing, when he joined the group, it was the first time they ever won a Grammy after all those years with David Ruffin and, you know, the original members. In fact, there was other members prior to David Ruffin. I'm sure you guys have seen the movies and everything. And I think to this date, there's been over 17 different members of the Temptations, and they still perform to this day. And Otis Williams, one of the originals, is still there. I just recently saw a video maybe a few weeks ago of them performing. And, you know, it's just amazing to see how these groups, even though they have changes within the lineup, some individuals have passed away, and they replace them with another vocalist, or some leave the group and they replace them with another lead. With that being said, I have to give a lot of respect to the Whispers because there's been different members of the Whispers. Marcus passed, Nick passed, and the twins and LaBelle are still doing the damn thing. These three brothers are still, you know, performing on a regular basis, you guys. And a few years ago, I was honored to be at an event for the Black Music Awards where they were honored for their contributions in the, you know, for Black music, along with Karen White and the host others. That was such a great honor for them, and they continue to be celebrated. I wish that the Grammys and other award shows, you know, will give these artists the respect due because they're here. They are still doing it. They're still selling out venues. And the Whispers are the one group, think of off the top of my head, that has never replaced anybody. Unfortunately, as we lost two of them, the three keep on moving, you know. They keep on going, and they keep on selling out venues. So all due respect, I want to share the story that I have about my time being part of the Dennis Edwards experience. As you guys know, Dennis Edwards was the replacement for a member of the Temptations. He came in and he was expected to fill the shoes of David Ruffin. David Ruffin, I mean, you know, that's a voice of his own. But Dennis was amazing. Dennis really was. He had that gruff sound. And back then, you know, a lot of artists, or actually a lot of the male artists, like the Teddy Pendergrass and those type of cats, had that growl in their voice when they would sing. And in key, and in tune, and just had a feeling about their songs and just made it cross into not just R&B, but even pop, with the songs even crossing the pop from time to time. So what occurred was Dennis went solo, and he had a hit single called Don't Look Any Further. You guys remember that? The day you Mateo, Jambalibayo. Don't look any further. Okay. Y'all remember that? And the individual who sung that along with him was a very beautiful, talented young lady named Saida Garrett. Saida actually co-wrote Man in the Mirror for Michael Jackson and also another song for Michael Jackson called I Can't Stop Loving You. If you've seen the tour back then when they were on tour, that was Saida singing along with Michael. I think she was on every single tour with Michael at the time when that song was, you know, on that album and was singing along with him. What had occurred was this. At the time, I was working at Warehouse Music in Los Angeles, California. Actually, it was called Big Ben's at first, and then Warehouse bought out Big Ben's. It was on the corner of La Brea and Rodeo Road. This location used to be a huge grocery store many years ago, and it became a huge record store. You can name, I mean, there was a bunch of artists that would come there and do autograph sessions and meet and greet with the fans and everything, which you don't see much of anymore. But this place was huge. And whenever a major artist would show up, the place was packed, okay? I mean, literally packed. They would have displays of the artist's albums, and I think the inventory was probably on a shrink because a lot of people probably would grab the album, get the artist to sign it, and walk out the door and not even pay for it, all right? But, oh, yeah, there would be tons of folks that would show up for these type of events. So I worked there, and a gentleman named Joe Foxworth, Darren Durst, the other cats, they were members of the group called Ozone on the Motown label. They had hit songs like Strut My Thing, Glasses, Gigolette with Tina Marie years back. And what occurred is that Joe happened to become the music director for Dennis's tour. Joe came to me and said, hey, man, how would you like to be the, you know, stage manager for the tour? I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, you know music. You know sound and light and everything. I'm like, you know, of course. I'm like, yeah. But then again, I have to think, but hold on. What am I getting paid? You know, so the pay agreement was great. I was happy with it. Managed to get a couple of the cats that were on board, you know, to go ahead and do this tour. Because, you know, we were young and we were like, yeah, this will be great, fantastic. Possibly move on to working with other artists. Okay. So, going to the rehearsals was interesting. We're at what's the name of that place in Hollywood? Studio Rehearsal, what's it called? SIR. Was it SIR? Studio Instrument Rentals? No. Studio Rehearsal. Anyway, it's in Hollywood, okay? I'm sure some of you folks that are listening might know what I'm talking about, but it's like this huge complex that they would do music videos at. You know, it's like they had different studios where you could do a small video, you could do rehearsals at this venue, and I think it was on Garver and everything off of Sunset, but, you know, some of you folks who in the industry, you know what I'm talking about. It's been years since I've been over there, but this was the spot. If you wanted to run into a major recording artist, that's where you would go because that's where they would prepare for their shows and rehearse. So was there for a moment, then went to another venue, and that's where I met where I met the rest of the band, and which these cats, you know, most of them were the members of the group Tease. The Tease came out of pretty much Gardena, California, and the surrounding areas. And these cats were some of the best musicians you would ever want to be in your band. Though they were a band, these cats would be the ones you would want to be in your band. I'll get back to that statement in a moment. So what was amazing to me was that we go to the studio, and the band is rehearsing, and Dennis is supposed to show up, right? Saida shows up, Saida Garrett. Now, keep in mind, I just told you, she wrote, this is after the Dennis Edwards thing. She wrote I Can't Stop Loving You, co-wrote Man in the Mirror. Saida pulls up in this yellow Volkswagen, literally, bug. She pulls up, got on her jeans, she gets out. Sweet looking woman, she's sitting there. We're listening to the band go through the songs, and Dennis hasn't showed up yet. Keep in mind, she's the one who sung the duet with him for this hit record. And she sits there, and we're talking, we're chatting, blah, 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 you know, and everything. And she's like, well, you know what? I can't stay here all night. I got to go. She leaves. I'm like, okay, that's not a good damn sign, you know. So after that, Dennis never shows up. In fact, Dennis never showed up to any of the rehearsals whatsoever. Never. So Alvin Few is the manager for Dennis, and he's in charge of the tour, and we're booked to perform in Oakland, California, at a place called Ivy's, and you guys remember this here. So the band goes up to Ivy on a tour bus. I go with the tour truck, per se, because all the equipment's on that. So pretty much a U-Haul, might as well say that. I ride up there with him, and we get there. We unload the equipment. We set up the stage, and it's just like maybe 2 hours before showtime. And we get a notice, or we're told, Dennis isn't going to be there. And we're like, what? He had flown to Oakland and then flew back to L.A. And we're trying to understand what the hell's going on here. Keep in mind, time, the clock is ticking. Because the show is about to go on within an hour. And these tickets are pre-sold. So we're like, okay, can Dennis actually fly back up here in time? Yeah, from L.A. to Oakland is, what, 30 minutes on a plane? At the least, we get the notice that ain't going to happen. I have two guys that work with me that work the stage, that did the setup and everything, and along with the sound and lighting crew that was accompanied with the venue. And I told the guys, I said, don't go out there. Don't touch nothing. Don't do nothing. We don't know what's going on. Here's the funny part. The promoter comes backstage into the dressing room, and he says, the band says, well, look, can you guys just go out and play some music? And I'll never forget what Cornelius Mims, legendary Cornelius Mims, good friend of mine, he said, what the hell? You want us to get them murdered out here? What the F do you think we are? That ain't going to work. They really wanted the band to go back, go on stage, not back on stage, just go on stage and just start playing music. Like the fans of Dennis Edwards are not going to realize something ain't right here, right? I'm just going to keep on playing music, right? Instrumentals. So in the story, they had to obviously tell the folks, and by the way, at that time, tickets were like $17.50 per person. They had to refund all those people for that show that night, and they did. Now, Dennis was scheduled, this was on a Friday, he was scheduled to perform that Saturday. So that Friday night, we all go back to our hotel rooms. We're like, damn, what the hell happened here, and blah, blah, blah. Grab a bite to eat. We're thinking, you know, maybe they're going to work it out. Might be an issue money-wise, and everything with the promoters and Dennis and this and the other. And we're booked for Saturday. Maybe we'll be fine. We don't hear nothing negative. So the next afternoon, we go to Ivy's for a sound check again. I'm in the booth with the sound guy and the lighting guy. I go down to the stage, check everything, go back up to the booth, get a phone call patched in. Dennis isn't coming back up there. I'm like, okay. And so I get over to PA and I said to the, because the band is on the stage doing the sound check, I said, y'all, let's pack it up. Dennis ain't coming back. True story now. And they're like, what? I'm like, pack it up. We got to get the hell out of here before people start arriving. And that's what we did. Now, this is supposed to be a tour. So on our way back from Oakland, we're supposed to stop in Bakersfield. And according to the itinerary, we were supposed to, Dennis was supposed to be performing with Phyllis Hyman and Kool & the Gang in Bakersfield. We pulled up at the venue and there ain't nobody there. Nobody. No signs of a show being set up. And I don't know what Alvin did. He made some phone calls and said, no, we're just going back to LA. And you know, we're all like looking at each, like, you know, at each other like, huh? But at least we're going back to LA. We're going back home. We're not going to another venue and have an experience of, you know, nothing happened. Granted, we haven't got a dime yet, none of us. So we get back to L.A., and it's like 2 or 3 days, I think, before we're supposed to perform at the Pixar Theater in Los Angeles. Now, this is a venue I think Dennis has to show up because Motown is there. They're not in Detroit anymore. They're in L.A. Motown headquarters there. All the celebrities are there. They're looking forward to this show. And so day of the show, did our normal setup. I put together the setup. We did the sound check and everything. Given a set of keys. And I don't recall why, but I was given a set of keys, and it gave me access to all the dressing rooms and everything. So the band's rehearsing, Dennis isn't there, and then all of a sudden I hear this voice, which is a unique voice, and it's Dennis. And he comes in, and he sits like midway in a theater in a row, and he just sits there, and I hear him talking to Alvin, and it doesn't sound happy at all. And Alvin says something back and forth and everything. Dennis gets up and he walks down the aisle and goes around the side back to the dressing room area, which was in the back side of the stage. Okay. So I'm like, okay. So anyway, as the evening goes on, and I don't live, by the way, I only lived about maybe 3 miles from the theater, so I could go home and do whatever I had to do, right? And so I went home, took a shower, you know, and everything, relaxed, came back about maybe 3 that afternoon, 4 that afternoon, and check on everything. And Dee Dee Maxey, who was a very popular radio personality there, beautiful young lady. You know, she's like, you know, talking, we're talking. And true story now, you guys, I'm not lying. I'm busy thinking about this whole thing because of what we went through. And Joe Foxworth and Darren Durr said, Mike, have you noticed she's been following you everywhere? I'm like, who? Dee Dee. I'm like, oh, okay. You need to pay attention. But I'm concentrating on what I'm doing, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, I see what you guys are saying, right? Okay. So, and I come to realize, yeah, they were right. But I'm concentrating on this show. So anyway, there were two opening acts before Dennis. And the two acts were great. They were great. They put on a great show. Dennis was supposed to do two shows that night. Dennis came out, and he did four, maybe five songs. Maybe five. Keep in mind, this is Dennis Edwards of the Temptations. He can't just do his hit songs as a solo artist. He's supposed to do, you know, a lot of the Temptation songs. He did probably five songs and walked off the stage, literally off to the left plank, went out the exit door, and I'm right there, and I see where, when he went out the door, I went over and looked, he got in a limo, took off. Crowd was not happy. At all. At all. I can't tell you if the promoters had or even offered to refund all those folks. In fact, I doubt it because they did see a show of the other artists. So now we have like a 45-minute hour break between the first show and the second show. I'm not sure if Dennis had came back. What I'm dealing with is, you know, everybody calming down and everything. And then there's people I know who are, you know, at the side door or the front door saying, Mike, can you get me in? Mike, can you get me in? You know, seriously. And I'm like, no, I can't. I really couldn't. There's other things that are pressing matters, right? So the opening act from the first show comes back for the second show. And I'm still nervous. Everybody's still nervous and worried. Is Dennis going to come back? He hasn't returned yet. So then the second act comes on, which I can't remember the name of that band, but they were really good, really tight. But we're still worried. Is Dennis going to show up? Dennis comes back and goes straight to his dressing room. Everybody's worried. You know, he's going to do the next show. I'm assuming that the promoters talk to him, this, that, and the other, all right? And then, boom, Dennis Edwards comes out on stage for his segment. And I go to the lighting guys, and I said, keep the lights. Don't shine no real bright. Put a filter on there where it's not real bright in his eyes. Make it kind of like low. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, this brother's hot. And he definitely don't want nothing, you know, bright in his eyes or something other. This is my opinion, right? Because I've seen it. Dennis does probably 8-9 songs. Much better than the first set. Okay, much better. But once he finished, second time around, he went straight out that door, got no more left. And we're like, okay. But now we're looking around, and we don't see nobody. We don't see Dennis. We don't see Alvin Pugh. We've been on the road for 2 weeks. Well, a week and a half. And nobody brings us any money. We call Alvin, no answer. Now everybody's kind of pissed off. Not at Dennis, because he's not responding to us. We're supposed to get paid at this late of the tour. We had nothing to do with what happened, what Dennis decided to do in Oakland, or what didn't happen in Bakersfield, and what just happened that night, we were hired to do our jobs, and we were there to do so. We can't reach the person with the bank. So finally, what happened was Joe Foxworth, who was the band director, who really put us all in position to work on this tour, managed to put together a meeting with Alan at his house in California, which was in the Sherman Oaks area, like, which is like Encino, you know, over where the Jacksons live and everything, you know, a high-end area. And we go there. And Alvin's like, well, I'm working on this and working on that. So, but, you know, I haven't got my money in there. We're like, we have nothing to do with that, Alvin. You should have had that taken care of. We need our money. And Alvin says, okay, I can pay you guys. I have to write you a check. Alvin opens up a checkbook and starts writing in it, and he hands off these checks, and we look, and it's the Bank of Georgia. Literally, he wants to write us out-of-state checks. And I forgot the other keyboard player's name. Oh, my God. He jumped up and went after Alvin, and we had to grab him. He was ready to choke this man to death, seriously. I know this for a fact. He like, man, I got a family. I ain't got time for this BS. He literally was going to choke Alvin. That's my opinion. We had to grab him. You ain't going to write no check on an out-of-state bank. Now, here's another crazy thing about it, is that I had a roommate when I lived in L.A., a female, and she had a keyboard. And Alvin had asked, could he rent her keyboard for Dennis? She said, oh, okay, how much? Alvin set the price. I don't recall what it was, but I thought it was reasonable, you know, for rental at that time. Dennis thought he was buying it. And she wanted her keyboard back because, you know, she saw what was going on. She came to the show. She saw what the deal was. So we go to Dennis's apartment. Yes, he lived in an apartment in Studio City. And to retrieve her keyboard. And we go in there. And it really broke my heart. I'm going to be honest with you guys. It really broke my heart. I'm not throwing Dennis Edwards under the bus, but I'm just sharing, like I said, true story. It broke my heart to see that he had a 45 of his hit record thumbtacked to a wall. He didn't have a gold album in a frame or a gold record. He had a 45 with a sleeve thumbtacked to a wall. And right next to it was my friend's keyboard. Alan P was there, and him and Dennis got into heated words. And Dennis was like, I thought I was buying it. And he probably thought he was purchasing it. Alvin lied. That I don't know. Maybe Alvin was pocketing the money, I don't know. But we took that keyboard back. So we lose contact with Alvin. We don't know what the hell's going on. Later on, we find out that they're on tour again. I'm like, oh, really? And they happen to come to Georgia. Now, the three girls who sung background for Dennis when the band that I was with and the crew that I was with, they followed and worked with Dennis, and they came here to Georgia with him. I wasn't aware of it right off the bat, but I kind of heard through, you know, word of mouth, yeah, the three girls, yeah, that's true. And one day I get a phone call from one of the girls. I'm here in Georgia now, right? I've moved to Georgia at this point. And they're like, Michael. I'm like, hey, need your help. They were left here in Georgia. They were at a La Quinta Hotel here in Georgia. And their time up, in the, I mean, their time had came up in the room. According to what they were telling me, Alvin's gone and Dennis is gone. And they're stuck here in Georgia. All right, wait a minute. Say that again? They told me, I said, oh, hell no. I couldn't believe it. They had no money. They had not gotten paid. And they were left here. True story. I could, through family and friends, to at least get them a place to stay while they worked on, you know, getting money from family out west so they can catch a. In fact, they couldn't even fly. They had to catch, if I remember correctly, they had to catch Greyhound home, which is like, what, 2 days or so? They were stuck. And that was like, wow, really? So now let me fast forward, and this is going to really trip you out. Years later, a friend of mine named Daryl Nettles and I, we would do Sound and Light for some of the local clubs. I would do DJ parties and everything. Daryl pretty much invested into all the equipment. I would borrow the records and this and the other. He pretty much bought all the equipment. He bought a DJ unit. He's like, man, that's basically yours. I'm like, no, it's yours. You pay for it. He said, no, it's yours. I said, no, it's yours. He said, no, it's yours. And eventually I bought it from him. But Daryl had a lot of sound and lighting equipment, and we started working with some of the local clubs. And there was a club that we worked with here in the Marietta area, and they would book people like Marvin Cease, who else? A lot of blues artists we worked with, Lattimore and everything. And lo and behold, they booked a show right before the holidays called the Temptations Review. And I look at the flyer and I'm like, no, it said Dennis Edwards and the Temptations Review. Is that how it said it? No, it said Temptations Review. The contract said something else because I was privy to see the contract later on. But it said a Temptations Review. I'm thinking it's the Temptations. And I'm looking at the flyer, and I'm like, hey, man, I only recognize one face on here, which is Dennis Edwards. And I'm like, okay. And some people came to me and said, I don't recognize nobody on here but him. So anyway, come to find out, the owner of the club, which I knew, he said, yeah, I booked him, Mike. And I said, yeah, I know Dennis. I've worked with him before. He said, really? He said, yeah. I didn't tell him the details. But the night of the show, or that afternoon, one of his people came there as we were setting up our sound and lighting and everything, talking and talking about how great Dennis is looking for and everything. I said, yeah, I know Dennis. He said, you do? He said, yeah. I said, I worked with him before. He said, oh, yeah, at Motown? I said, no. I said, on the Don't Look Any Further tour. And that guy looked at me. Black people don't blush. But that's the first time I ever seen one turn really dark. I guess that's his way of blushing. And he looked at me and said, man, don't say nothing to Dennis about that, right? I said, so you know. He said, yeah, I know those stories. I said, none of us ever got paid. He said, yeah, but you'll get paid on this. I said, of course we're going to get paid because the club owner's going to pay us. This has nothing to do with. And I said, Alvin Pugh. And when I said Alvin Pugh, he said, oh, you know who Alvin Pugh is? I said, of course. Now, that said something, because here's what happened. Dennis came out like normal, did a couple of songs like normal, and walked off the stage like normal, and went backstage and went to his dressing room. The second part of the show, same thing. This time, he came out, did a few songs, went backstage, and then walked out the venue, out the side door, like normal. And people were not happy. I share these stories because they're the truth. It's really the truth. And there's people that can verify what I'm telling you. I have no reason to lie. I'm not gaining anything. But it's just sad that when you have so much of love and respect certain artists and look up to them being at a certain level. And I don't know what his problems were, issues were, but obviously it was being famous was not enough for him. But right there, I told you three different things from Oakland to LA to Georgia, my experiences with a legend. And I don't know if I should feel thankful for it, sad about it, maybe a combination of both. Because this cat, I mean, you still hear him on the radio, you still hear him in, I mean, his songs, you hear these songs in movies and TV shows and everything. But I saw in his face, I saw the sweat, I saw in his eyes, I saw in his mannerisms, this man was not having a good life. He really wasn't. After being the one who brought the Temptations their first Grammy Award, their first ever, after all those years. I really don't have much more to say about it. I got about maybe less than 15 minutes left. But I thought I'd try something different tonight, a Tuesday night, true stories. And I'm sharing it with you. And I hope to share more. I hope that some other individuals that I know in the industry will be willing to share. And it doesn't have to be, you know, negative, but just like I shared about the time I was at earlier in the show, being at Sammy Davis Jr.'s house and seeing all the stuff, you know, back then, you know, that was just a great experience, you know. And I'm sure many people have this great experience. And it doesn't have to be just entertainers or anything, just true experiences that might have changed your life, might have inspired you. Not necessarily an entertainer, as I said, just an experience of being somewhere, going somewhere, a trip that you took, you know, that inspires you to be who you are now. True stories. Because, see, the thing is that where we hear a lot of things, or we see a lot of posts on social media where so-and-so's dead. And it's like, no, they're not. If that was true, it would have been all over. It would have been everywhere. But people post stuff that is not true. You should know better. Unfortunately, people just grasp the first thing they hear, and then they automatically push it out there to other folks who are just as ignorant as they are and keep on spreading the false information. That's like I said tonight. I said, I want you guys to come on and share a story. And you could tell the truth or tell a false one, but then I want to try to see if this will pick up and see if you guys will be interested in seeing if, is it believable? You can come on and tell a false narrative. And I want to see how many of us believe it are you that convincing? Obviously, there's people out there that's convincing, and people do spread it instead of doing their research and homework to realize. Because, I mean, you can, the moment you see something on social media and you go ahead and share it, you know you can go and, is Eddie Murphy dead? You're not going to see any confirmation of it unless it's true. CNN, Fox News, and everybody is going to have the truth before you ever imagine. You don't see it. If you don't hear anything from them, it ain't true. TMZ, all of them, they're way ahead of you. So don't go by what somebody shares on Facebook or Instagram and all that crap. The major network definitely going to confirm it before you even have a clue. You know, hours before you even have a clue, they'll confirm that. So again, I want to say thank you guys for tuning in, the ones who did. I do see some numbers on the board, and I see some people in the chat room. Thank you so much for listening. Maybe I'll try this again next week and see who might want to participate. But Tuesday True Stories. I'm going to try it, see if it works next Tuesday, and see what you guys think. If you have any input, any ideas, please contact me. I would definitely take your opinion to heart. All right? All right. So anyway, let's get out of here. Hey, enjoy the rest of your day or your evening, and we'll see you this Saturday on TMGS. By the way, it looks like I may be in Birmingham next month. I'm sorry, in May, for an event there, and so we're working on that and conversations. So getting that all together. There's a great event that's going over there at Legion Field Pavilion. So I'll keep you posted on that, and we'll keep you posted. And also, I talked to an individual just last night who. Interesting conversation. He's a hairdresser. He does everything from hairdressing, from the eyelash and everything, you know. And I mean, this guy is legit. Trust me, he's legit. And he just happened to come in and shared. He was trying to get some photos right of some of his clients. And of course, I could see the photos, and I was like, oh, I know that person. I know that person. Oh, you know him? I said, yeah. I said, R.L., I know R.L. No, you know R.L. I'm like, oh, you know who that is? I said, yeah, I know who that is, and blah, blah, blah. I just got to talking, him and his wife, and we were talking and everything. He said, well, I appreciate you getting my photos up, because initially he was not going to get them until 10 o'clock today, but I pushed it up where it would print immediately. He's like, I'll try to get you some help with your show, because I told him I have a show. Yeah, I could probably get you some guests. And I'm like, okay, please do. And he's like, okay, I'll do whatever I can. I said, call me tomorrow. And he said, okay, how about I call you? I said, that's fine. And so we're going to hook it up. We're going to make it work. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in on this special edition of Tuesday Night on TMGS, the Michael Gay Show on the TMG and the Michael Gay Network. I'm going to leave you with some drops and see you this Saturday. Keep following the network. Love you. God bless.
Hey, this is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female band Climax, and you're listening to The Michael Gay Show. Yeah.
Another like summertime in the hood. That's time for block party. have a barbecue.
Happy phone, everybody go call the crew.
Let's have a bar party.
Summertime, and the sun don't set the night.
As long as the beat don't break and the wine keep popping, we're gonna keep rocking till the cops come knocking.
Y'all, this is St. James. What's up, y'all? This is St. James, and you're listening to TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. Tune in every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for interesting topics and awesome music. Now back to the show.
Self-control, your family wasn't cool, and you were sleeping all alone, baby. But now I got you pulled back together. I used to tell my friends we'd have been through stormy weather. You went and got another man, cause he got your head up, and now you wanna leave. Girl, I won't share the tea. Another rhyme, but girl, this ain't no switchback, and you can't go forget that. Try hard to understand, there ain't no second chance. Cleaned up.
making money, went living lavish until I took control completely, and all I asked in return is for your loyalty. Do you really love me, baby?
I know you said you love me,
do you love me like,
but if you did, how could you go and do something like this to me after everything I've done for you? I mean everything.
Ooh, do you really love me, baby? Do you love me like you say you do? Do you love me? Do you really love me, honey?
Do you really love me, honey?
Every word that you say is true.
Why you wanna mess around? Why you wanna mess around me? I gave you everything.
That your body needs attention, and I don't wanna take away from your body's perfection by being too rough. It's not enough to just be gentle, so don't wanna make it hard, 'cause it's always too simple. So don't you ever stop being in my world.
I don't ever wanna stop loving you, boy. So don't you ever stop giving me joy.
I'll be gentle.
Please be very gentle.
When I'm loving you. When I'm loving you.
Boy, I hope you understand that you're
like I love, I'll keep it simple. So just come and celebrate our love. Let's not be judgmental, baby. I won't stop loving you, loving you. Don't you ever stop being in my world.
And
I
never wanna stop loving you, boy. So don't you ever stop giving me joy.
You got me.
Calling.
just to find the love within.
Got a thing for you,
and I can't let go.
My friends wonder what is wrong with me.
Well, I'm in a daze from your love, you see.
I came back to let you know. Got a thing for you,
and I can't let go. I would not do.
My friends wonder what is wrong with me.
Well, I'm in the daze from your love, you see.
I came back to let you know. Got a thing for you,
and I can't let go. I would not do. Make me do for love what I would not do.
Make me do for love what I would not do.
Make me do for love what I would not do.
Take no more. Tell me you love me, I can't take no more. I really need you, I need your voice. Tell me you love me, I can't take no more.
Thank you.
need you. All I want is for you to call my name. You and me forever, still the same. You're all that I want, all that I need. Tell me you love me, baby, please.
Tell me you love me. want to tell you that I love you.
I love you.
You mean everything to me.
You're everything.
Through all this time.
Somehow
we stayed together.
Through
the good and the bad.
Hey, you guys, thanks for tuning in this evening to the TMGS. That was the Jones Girls with The Sweetest Pain, written and produced by Mr. Dexter Wanzel, who has been a guest on this show. And hopefully we can get Dexter back on. What do you think about that? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and shut it down. Appreciate some of you for tuning in excuse me, on this special Tuesday night broadcast. And hopefully we can start building up a Tuesday night broadcast, and hopefully you guys will participate in our Tuesday night broadcast. I have 7 days a week, 3 hours a day of conversating with you if you want to be part of the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network, and you have a show that you or a topic you want to bring to the forefront, give me a shout out. Let's see what we can do. Probably can work with you. All right, God bless you guys, and have a blessed evening, blessed rest of your week. We'll see you this coming Saturday, as usual, 6 p.m. Eastern at www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS, or call into the show at 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. All right, I'm going to get on out of here. Talk to you later. Much love. Peace.